Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Mountain Blitz ACC edition. I'm Joe Lisi, joined by former National Coach of the Year, Terry Bowden. Coach, a great slate of week one action. We saw upsets across the top 25. I want to get your thoughts about how last week played out, but more importantly, that battle in Tallahassee. Top-ranked Alabama, eighth in the country, goes down to Florida State. They lose that matchup 31-17. Gus Malzahn and the Florida State offense were humming last Saturday.
Well, you know, I said all along that the entire Florida State's entire success would depend on the ability for the quarterback, TC, Tommy Castellanos, and Gus Malzahn to mesh, to get together and work well together, and that's exactly what they did. Gus Malzahn's going to be successful in offense. Whatever quarterback, if they can run and be his kind of guy, Tommy Castellanos found the right coordinator together. That was the big difference. As you watch that game, TC, Tommy Castellano, not only did he run the offense, he was physically tough enough to extend first downs, to make that extra yard, to just make play, extend plays and expend downs. And that was a difference in the ball game. I was just so surprised that Alabama was unprepared to me to stop an offense. They could have watched game after game after game on video to prepare for.
Throughout the offseason, you and I had talked. It's one thing to talk the talk, right? Like Thomas Castellanos, like we're going to be much different and much improved in 2025. But he backed it up with his play, 152 passing yards. He also rushed 16 times for 78 yards and one touchdown run. His ability to sustain drives, convert on third down, just seemed to embody what that team showed on Saturday afternoon. It wasn't just the offense. It was the defense getting after Ty Simpson and just an all-around effort by the Florida State Seminoles. Mike Norvell had his back to the wall. He got off the hot seat with that victory last Saturday.
He sure did. He got an A+ in bringing in Gus Malzahn, knowing he played Alabama. And Gus, either as a head coach or as a coordinator, calling plays, was 6-6 against Alabama. He's won half his ball games against Alabama. Most of the time they have been favored. He knew what he was doing, Gus. And Gus came back in almost every special, every trick play that he's had over the years. He had them ready and hit on several big plays. It was a perfect situation to go into. And again, my whole concern was, why didn't Alabama go back and watch everything? Because it seemed every time he had to have a special play, it hit in the game with that quarterback. So it was a great play offensively for FSU. That inspired the defense. It's a shame we're not complimenting defensive coordinator Tony White, because that's a different defense. They played with emotion. They played with reckless abandon. They get after the ball. You know, they gang tackled. All those things they quit doing last year, they brought back. So it was a great atmosphere in Tallahassee. I was in Tallahassee for the game. It was a great atmosphere on Bobby Bowden Field. And now you just have to wonder, how far can Florida State go if that quarterback can contain? And I don't know if he has to humble himself, but just be careful. You know, he put the T-shirts out. He put the T-shirts out after the game, and I'm thinking, be careful now. Be careful. But you know what? My dad once had a player down in Tallahassee that he couldn't control. His name was Deion Sanders, and sometimes you just got to let him go.
The biggest thing for me, Coach, too, when you look at the turnaround from last year to this year, especially in game number one, is that the ineffectiveness of the rushing attack. Last year, Florida State had one of the worst rushing attacks in all of college football, averaging 89 rushing yards per game. They pounded the rock on Saturday afternoon for 230 yards on that Alabama front seven, 4.7 yards per carry. That was a dominant offensive line effort, and the ability to really convert on third down, especially late in the game, allowed Florida State to run out the clock. The other factor as well, you mentioned Tony White. Last year, this defensive front seven allowed 184 rushing yards per game. They held Alabama to less than 100 yards, 84 yards on the ground, and less than 3 yards per carry. That was a dominant defensive effort on both sides of the ball. Interior line outplayed Alabama and really showed that they had more physicality than the Crimson Tide.
Yeah, Alabama, we said before they had to run, and this is going to sound like a broken record. Every upset, every team that lost could not run the football well enough, and the teams that could run it well enough won the games. This game, no exception. Ty Simpson, a new quarterback, a young quarterback, he needed to have a complimentary running attack, but he didn't have it. And to be honest with you, he looked a little pedestrian. He didn't look like that he had that exceptional talent. I know he's probably a very good quarterback, but he's not one of those guys that just stands out and wins it on his own. They had to have a running attack, and they didn't. And, Joe, we're going to talk about this all day long. The teams that didn't run the ball very well early, they didn't win football games.
We'll talk about Florida State's success later in the show as we break down the current ACC odds, but there was another upset. It took place in Death Valley, South Carolina. LSU gets the upset over Cade Klubnik. There were a 4.5-point road underdog. They trailed early in the first half. They made second half adjustments and steal the game, coach, 17-10. Brian Kelly breaks the streak. He lost three straight week one opening matchups in Baton Rouge. Not this time. They're a top five ranked football team entering week number two.
You know, and when I watched the game, it didn't feel like an upset. LSU looked like they had better talent. Now, I bought Dabo's stuff. He said the best team we've had since we won national championships. I didn't think they were quite that good. I didn't see a Travis Etienne and some other guys that were on that team when they won national championships. Now, they're very good. I think this Clemson team's not much below LSU, but when I watched the game and I saw the talent, LSU probably should have scored again and beaten them by another touchdown, but the fact was it really wasn't an upset after we got to the game. They had a little better football team, and because they had the better football team, they won the game.
Well, when we talked in the breakdown prior to the outcome, we said and talked about the ability for potentially Clemson to rush the football on that front seven of LSU. Last year, the Clemson Tigers averaged 173 rushing yards per game. You talk about Blake Baker and that defense by LSU. They held Clemson to only 31 rushing yards in that contest, 1.6 yards per carry, and Clemson only converted, coach, 3 of 13 third down conversions. Yeah. To me, that was the difference in the matchup.
You know, and I'll say this, Garrett Riley has great background. He understands offensive football. He knows how to put points up there. But when he gets to a tight ball game, he throws the football. His answer is almost always throw it more, throw it more, throw it more. And that's where you see him not running the ball enough. Sometimes you got to keep running the football just to make sure you stay balanced. That game was a close ball game. Not all the running plays are going to make big plays out of them, but you got to keep doing it. I really think Dabo's got to keep a close handle on that. They can't take a walk away from the running attack just because sometimes the offensive coordinator has built his reputation on throwing the football.
We talked about Cade Klubnik being a Heisman frontrunner. Yeah. He was a 9-1 shot, completed 50% of his passes, seemed to struggle late in the fourth quarter. Your thoughts about his performance on Saturday night?
No, I didn't think he's good enough for them to win their conference. And I think Clemson is still going to be right there in the hunt with Miami for the conference championship. Now, again, it's a little bit like I felt the talent level of LSU. I thought Nussmeier showed a little bit more stuff. Now, I thought Cade did a good job. His team was not as good. You put a good running attack with Clemson, so the quarterback now has people fearing the run. All of a sudden, his routes are wide open. He didn't have a lot of open receivers in that football game. They were tightly contested. There weren't a lot of easy completions for him to have.
Clemson struggled on third down. They obviously couldn't stop Garrett Nussmeier and the LSU Tigers offense, especially in the second half. There was the controversial incomplete pass to Barry and Brown that could have been ruled a touchdown. If that was the case, LSU might have won 24-10. We'll come back and break down the other two games in the ACC right here on the Bowden Blitz. Keep it where it is.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
On the Bowden Blitz, Joe Lisi and Coach Bowden breaking down week one in the ACC. We left off talking about the battle in Clemson, LSU, and the Clemson Tigers. There was a huge upset in South Beach on Sunday night. Carson Beck in Miami as a 2.5-point underdog strikes the upset over 6th-ranked Notre Dame coach Mario Cristobal, and the Hurricanes get the 3-point victory, 27-24. That was a dominant offense and defensive line effort. They outplayed Notre Dame on Sunday night.
Well, you take Carson Beck is a veteran, battle-tested quarterback. He may not be as flashy as Cam Ward. He's not, but he knows how to manage a football team, play under pressure, play in big games, and Miami had a defense that was able to finish the football game. The thing that surprised me about Notre Dame, they have a back named Jeremiah Love. They didn't utilize him enough. They had to run the football. Their new freshman, redshirt freshman quarterback, C.J. Carr, his first big start. I'll say this. I think he's going to be an outstanding quarterback. He's got the feel of a good quarterback, but he wasn't ready to control the game. They didn't get enough rushing attack, held to under 100 yards rushing, and everybody else on Saturday or this past weekend. You can't run the ball, you don't win. Notre Dame did not run it well enough. Miami came through closer on defense. Carson Beck was the veteran, and they came away with a big win by stopping them on the last series.
Great points, and you bring up Carson Beck. He completes 20 of 31 passes, 205 yards, 2 touchdowns, the acrobatic catch by C.J. Daniels, the former Liberty and LSU transfer. I mean, that was an amazing one-handed catch that really allowed Miami to build a lead. They gained that momentum in the second half as well and really shut down C.J. Carr when it mattered on the final drive. To your point as well, I think the biggest aspect about why Miami won that ball game on Sunday night, Coach, the offensive line protected Carson Beck. I didn't see Notre Dame get in his face, not until late in the fourth quarter on one sack late in the ball game. Night. But on third downs, Miami was able to convert. We talked about it in the breakdown. Miami last year converted 56% of their third down opportunities with Cam Ward. That offensive line protected Carson Beck. He could go through the passing tree and make plays when it mattered. And then the speedster, Tony, Notre Dame had no answers to contain him. He abused that secondary all evening.
Yeah, there's no question. And remember, Cam Ward made third downs work because he could always extend a play. He could avoid the rush. He could spin out. Carson Beck, you had to have a solid pass protection line. Miami's been talking about this offensive line. A lot of people think it's one of the top 3 or 4 offensive lines in the country, and that's exactly what they needed, again, with a defense that was able to close. Because last year, no matter what they did on offense, the defense couldn't close. And so this is a different football team. They got a new defensive coordinator, and that gave them some new positioning on defense. I'm always aware of how is the new defensive coordinator going to put the players. Some coaches can put players in a better position to be successful. I think they've got a style of defense. They were all over the place. They played good coverage, good solid defense, and they got after them. And I think that was the other factor, how well the defense closed at Miami.
You mentioned that Notre Dame was held to under 100 yards. They only rushed 94 in the game, 3.5 yards per carry. From what you saw from a defensive perspective, when looking at the front seven, do they look like a national caliber defense? I know it's only one game, but knowing what we saw last year where they struggled with the likes of Syracuse and Georgia Tech and Iowa State in the bowl loss last year, does this defense look bigger, faster, and stronger to potentially not only challenge for an ACC championship, but potentially a college football playoff appearance?
Yeah, you know, one game, I'm not sure you can make all those evaluations. You look at Clemson, they lost to a very good LSU team. How good are they? Notre Dame, defensively, are they as good as last year? Well, they lost to a very good Miami football team, and they may well be as very well. I think they've got a good enough team to get themselves in the playoffs and go from there. But it's a key. They've got to establish the running attack. I don't think you want to go out there with that quarterback. And he's not a runner. He's a good classic quarterback. You know, grandson of Lloyd Carr, former coach of Michigan. He seems to have all the football IQ and savvy that you need for a quarterback. But they've got a guy like Jeremiah Love, who I think as a running back could be one of the best in the country. They've got to establish and improve their running attack. And you got to give a guy to the ball if you wanted to make yardage.
The other matchup, it took place in Chapel Hill. It was Chapel Bill. The Tar Heels and their new head coach, Bill Belichick, were 3.5-point home underdogs to Sonny Dykes and TCU. We thought that Bill Belichick would bring defense. That wasn't the case, Coach. No. TCU ran all over the Tar Heels en route to a 48-14 dominating road win. Can Bill Belichick resurrect the Tar Heels to at least become bowl eligible this year?
We're going to have to see a lot of improvement. I mean, an entire new staff, 70 new football players, every position brand new. I mean, I don't care how successful you've been in the past. You can't just go out there and magically just make something that's not good enough, as good as everybody expected. And because he is Bill Belichick, everybody just assumed that money and fame and success in the past could turn that program around. Well, Sonny Dykes, it's not his first rodeo. He's a heck of a good coach, and he's done had great success himself. TCU just reminded North Carolina fans that this ain't going to be magic. They've got to go out there and build a football team, and it's going to take more than just one year.
They have three winnable potential games at a conference before they square off against Dabo Sweeney and the Clemson Tigers. They do play Charlotte this week. They're a 19-point favorite in that matchup, Coach. When you look at the quarterback position, South Alabama quarterback Gio Lopez started. He only converted 4 of 10 pass attempts, 69 yards. Max Johnson looked better. Is there any shot Max Johnson could get the start next weekend?
Yeah, that starter looked shaky to me. He looked shaky. He made poor decisions. He got panicked at times. I wouldn't shock me. I'm not so sure he's the answer they hoped he would be.
When we come back, we'll break down week two in the ACC right here on the Bowden Blitz.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
We Continuing the conversation of week one in the ACC, Coach Bowden and I looked about the two games, Miami, Notre Dame, and North Carolina, TCU. We're going to take a look at the current odds entering week number two. Clemson still has the best odds, Coach, to potentially win an ACC championship. The loss to LSU does not affect anything in conference. You see them right there at plus 150 to potentially win the title. Miami cuts their odds down from plus 350 to now plus 320, and Louisville right there at 8-1. Is there any other team outside potentially Clemson, Miami, and Louisville that you think could potentially steal some thunder?
No, I still think we got to watch. You know, we had a good win out of Georgia Tech. SMU had an easy game. We'll see a little bit more about them against Baylor this week, how good they are. And Duke against Illinois. Those are three teams that I think you got to keep your eye on. But to me, it's always been Clemson and Miami, Miami and Clemson. I do think it is closer. But if LSU is good as we think they are, Clemson's not a lot worse than we thought they were either.
When you look at Clemson, and I brought this up in the pregame, 70-5 at home prior to that loss, dating back since 2015. The last year and a half, they've lost to Louisville, they lost to South Carolina at home, and now the loss to LSU. Is there really a home field advantage now in Death Valley, South Carolina?
Well, you know what I've always said, most teams that have great home field advantages, they usually have better football teams than the team they're playing against. You've got to remember, in the old days, your three non-conference games were usually not nearly as good. You played those always at home, so your record was always good. But the key has always been, if you got more talent than the other team, home or away, you're likely going to win. Clemson right now is not as talented, I don't think yet, as they were in their two championship years, but I still think they are very formidable. That's a hard place to play, and again, you and I both think LSU's a lot better than we thought, and they are be a contender in the SEC. And if they're only a 7-point difference than Clemson, that's still a very tough place to play, and Clemson still has a good chance to me. Other than Miami, they got a chance to run the table in the conference and play for the conference. Oh, they don't play Miami, except maybe in the ACC championship.
The one team that I watched play over the weekend, and we didn't talk about them in the breakdowns because they played an FCS opponent, was Duquesne. But Pat Narduzzi and Eli Holstein in that offense were humming yet again. They get a dominating home win. You know, at the start of the year, they were in the area of, let's say, 40-1 or 45-1 to potentially win an ACC championship, you know, buried with some of the, you know, teams at the bottom of the conference. Would you rather be at the bottom of the conference or seeing all these teams knock each other off and potentially make a second half run, or would you still want to be in the area of SMU, Louisville, and seeing what Miami was able to do and getting that win where they have momentum earlier in the season?
Well, I don't think I ever want to be ranked lower, as high as I possibly can. If I get ranked low, we're going to use that for momentum. Backs against the wall, us against the world type of thing. I think Pittsburgh came out so strong last year. Everybody knows how good they can play. And, you know, and they have been good, very, very good in this conference in the last few years. And so wouldn't surprise me if, but they would be a dark horse. But it wouldn't surprise me if a Pittsburgh or an SMU or a Duke or one of these teams comes along and sneaks up there and gets in the hunt. But it would be because of a special year and not because of their talent, because I think Miami and Clemson have that higher talent level.
We'll talk about the games for week number two. You mentioned the Illinois-Duke game. That's a 2.5-point spread. We talk about Darian Mensah. We talk about Manny Diaz and how he's maintained that momentum in Durham. I know they started slow in their week one performance, but you got to love that you have an experienced quarterback, and now Illinois is coming to your house for potentially an upset in Durham on Saturday night.
Well, you know, and I love what Manny Diaz has done there, and the quarterback they were able to pick up out of Tulane is a guy that is very, very exciting as a quarterback. But I don't go with what's happening. The team that runs the best has been winning, and Illinois is going to be built on a strong running attack. And so I like Duke at home, but I just got to stay with that running until I see someone that can run better than the other team get beat. I'm going to stick with Illinois here because only 2.5 points, just a field goal difference. But I like that strong running attack at Illinois.
Yeah, we'll see how that game plays out. Coach and I will break down all the Week 2 slate in the ACC later in the week. We're talking about Darian Mensah, the transfer for Tulane. He accounted for 3 passing touchdowns and 364 passing yards in the rout over Elon. Could be points aplenty Saturday in Durham. We'll see you later in the week right here on the Bowden Blitz.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.